Is the running back dead zone cooked in fantasy football? That is a question we are going to answer today, because in 2023 and 2024, the dead zone massively overperformed expectations. In 2025, we came back to earth down a little bit. First off, before we get into anything, this video is done from the framework of a PPR, half PPR mindset. Those of you guys that play in standard leagues, this is a lot less applicable, what we're about to talk about. But Danny, the dead zone, we've talked about it for years. It showed itself to be not dead last year, because as I made mention to in 2023, 50% of a positive win rate running back was drafted in the dead zone. 2024, 57.14%. But in 2025, that crashed all the way down to 28.57%, a lot more misses in the dead zone than we had seen in the previous two seasons. And the wide receivers conversely produced a lot better in the dead zone, as we had kind of come accustomed to seeing over a long stretch going back to like 2015.
Yeah, and I think the result of this was twofold last year. We saw the high-end wide receivers fail to pay off. You know, for example, you look at like the CeeDee Lamb types, the Nico Collins types. It's just overall last year, the wide receiver position at the top really faltered. And some of the best league winners in fantasy were the running backs that were going higher. So if you think inherently, if wide receivers are failing up top, therefore the wide receivers selected in the dead zone, quote unquote, are probably going to pay off at a higher degree, and vice versa. If all the running backs that are being taken early are actually paying off, then it's harder to get those values really paying off in the mid rounds.
Not to mention the mid round quarterbacks all sucked as well, outside of Josh Allen. All like Lamar and Burrow and all those guys didn't have great seasons. So again, 28.57% of the time you got a hit in round 4 to 7 last year. 60% of the time you got a hit at wide receiver. And a lot of it was just that the wide receiver scoring was pretty flat outside of, you know, your Chris Olave, George Pickens, Davante Adams types. Even the wide receivers in the dead zone weren't extremely good either. When we look at the actual running backs from the dead zone that paid off, and again, 8.3% is your average win rate, 1 divided by 12. So the players who had an above average win rate were RJ Harvey, DeAndre Swift, David Montgomery, and Trevion Henderson. Those were the four running backs that produced a positive win rate. Amarian Hampton just missed that, and he definitely would have hit it had he stayed healthy for the Los Angeles Chargers. But I do think when you look at this, you go, okay, yeah, there were a lot of bad picks in the rounds 4 to 7 range at the running back position. Like, remember Caleb Johnson? Like, it's pretty bad. Even if you extended this to include like the top 100 or top 110 overall picks, you get Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams, Jalen Warren as some of the better running backs in that area. But you're even then, you're still only looking at a 26.9% hit rate, and the wide receivers in that territory where it's 17 out of 28 producing a positive win rate. So generally speaking, what we thought was going to happen did happen. Like, the dead zone did come back to earth, and it was very clear that double hero RB was the strategy last year, because you wanted to get your running backs early. You wanted to kind of fade wide receiver or running backs in the dead zone and kind of fill out your wide receiver core. And if you hit on an Olave or a Pickens or, you know, an Adams or something like that, you would have really had a huge advantage over your Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb league mates.
Well, this was a big point you made last year too, even despite liking the dead zone profiles. You mentioned that in terms of the overall ADP landscape, running backs were coming at such a premium value, wide receivers kind of being pushed up the board, because as we saw in the data beforehand, it was leaning towards wide receivers up top. It was leaning towards hitting on those dead zone profiles in 2023 and 2024. 2025 being the changing of the guard, I am curious with this year's ADP, If the wide receivers do perform up the top and we do see some more injuries at running back, if the data kind of reverts back.
Yeah, not to mention too, like every year, the dead zone's only going to perform as good as the players in the dead zone. And this year, as we're going to go through every dead zone profile, kind of, are they a good pick? Are they a bad pick in the dead zone?
A lot of good ones.
There's a lot of decent ones. Yeah, like that's the thing where we might see this bounce back a little bit in 2026. Let's talk about the failures here. So from Aaron Jones down to Joe Mixon on this chart, why did these guys fail? Because that's the goal here. We're trying to use this data to predict what's going to happen in 2026. A lot of it was like, okay, they had other talented backs in their backfield. They weren't themselves very talented, like a Caleb Johnson or an Isaiah Pacheco. Kenneth Walker, for example, a big time hindrance of Zach Charbonnet in that backfield, couldn't separate himself from the other backs on the team. Same goes for Chuba Hubbard, because Rico Dowdle was a huge part of that backfield. And then you had guys like Aaron Jones or Tony Pollard or Alvin Kamara, who were on like really bad teams, really bad offenses. They couldn't move the ball for a period of time, and some older injury concerns with some of those guys too. comparing that to the hits, it kind of makes sense when you think about it logically that the Broncos running back was the one that hit. They were in the AFC championship game. The Patriots running back was one of the only hits. AFC championship game, the Bears running back, the Lions running back, the Chargers running back pre-injury. Those were the best picks out of this territory.
Yeah, versus, I mean, you look at some of the other names, Joe Mixon, people were taking the top 80 despite him literally dealing with an ailing foot. I don't know if he shot himself in the foot. I don't know if he had an infection. I don't know what the case was with Joe Mixon. People were taking him in the top 80, even knowing that he wasn't going to be available in week one. And as we know in the season, he didn't end up playing at all. I mean, the fact that he had a 2.8% win rate, I mean,
that just shows how bad the picks were across the board in the mid rounds. And same with James Conner too. Like, you could be like, oh, those were injuries, you can't count those. It's like, but those are older running backs. Sometimes older running backs get injured more often, especially if they're coming into the season like Mixon was with an injury already.
Yeah, and the only one here that does confuse me is Ken Walker, because if you just think in terms of the split we saw with him and Charbonnet in 2024 and how good the Seahawks offense ended up becoming in 2025, if you just told me that the Seahawks would finish as the number one offense in the league in scoring, I would have said Ken Walker probably finished as a top 3 to 5 running back given the split he had with Charbonnet in 2024. The thing that I think I discounted mostly, maybe a lot of people discounted mostly, is that even though he had that workload in 2024 with Ryan Grubb, we discounted the fact that with Clint Kubiak, maybe he wanted more of a committee. Maybe he didn't trust the injury concerns. And we saw he kind of, you know, injury managed him in the regular season. And then I had to watch this guy completely go off in the playoffs when he wasn't getting me fantasy points.
Yeah, well, I mean, even with the hits in this territory, RJ Harvey, DeAndre Swift, David Montgomery, Trevion Henderson, all of these guys were hindered by the other running back in their backfield. Like, J.K. Dobbins was the starter before he got injured. DeAndre Swift had to deal with Menengai. David Montgomery, of course, had to deal with Jahmyr Gibbs, and Trevion Henderson had to deal with Ramondre Stevenson. So we didn't actually get any smashes, period, out of the dead zone last year. There was no, like, league-winning. Like, the smashes came later with Travis Etienne and Javonte Williams and Jalen Warren, where they were going, and they were outside of the dead zone, which ended up making for better picks at their point in time. So what we're going to talk about here is the anatomy of a dead zone running back. If your running back pick in the mid rounds has multiple of these problems, they're probably a dead zone profile. They have talent question marks, high-end competition for touches, which is what we just talked about. The team or the offensive line doesn't project to be very good. The lack of pass catching upside is always a problem too. Some of the best hits out of the dead zone typically are running backs who can catch the football. And then there's some like age and injury question marks sometimes too, taking older running backs out of the dead zone. You got to worry about that kind of stuff. If they have like, let's say 3 or 4 of those 6 things that I just mentioned, they're probably a dead zone running back. A bet zone running back, which is something we've talked about for a couple of years, is kind of like the inverse of that. Usually the mid-round running backs that are not like just projectable volume guys are like breakout candidate type of dudes, guys that are in year 1, year 2, year 3 of their career. We don't know how talented they are. Or maybe they're a veteran running back who still got it, like a David Montgomery, for example, this year. Pass catching upside, obviously a plus. Most talented back in the backfield, definitely a plus. On a top 10 to 15 scoring offense, ideally. And then an opportunity to maybe score some touchdowns, be the primary ball carrier on the goal line.
So I think the player props are not the way to look at it. But in terms of projecting where offenses can finish, where offensive lines can play, maybe pace of play for teams, that's where I think it's important if you're going to look at Vegas.
Yeah, and not to mention too, like hitting on a running back who produces 16 fantasy points per game in PPR leagues in round 2 is way different than hitting on that in round 6.
Exactly.
Hitting on a 16 point per game running back in round 6 is a league winner. That is a league winning ceiling. A round 2 running back to be a league winner needs to score like 18, 19, 20 points per game. The running back dead zone in 2026, based on our draft guide, which is live right now, you guys can get it for free by signing up on Underdog using our promo code FSE, or you can get it with the season pass, which is live now on flockfantasy.com. Both of those are linked down below in the description. The running back dead zone in 2026, multi-site ADP of Sleeper, ESPN, Underdog, Yahoo, all the sites that you guys are probably playing on right now. You can see that the dead zone and basically on the far right column, our average rank based on these profiles and their ADP, is a mixed bag. There's guys that are veteran running backs in here. There's guys that are breakout candidates in here. And again, we're going to go through them one by one and kind of determine, are they checking the box for a dead zone running back, or are they checking the box for a bet zone running back, a guy that we actually want to take the risk on. So Danny, we're going to go through these guys one by one and talk about exactly what kind of archetype are they? Are they a dead zone or a bet zone? And then by the end of this video, we'll come up with like our 3 favorite dead zone running backs here, because again, it's very profitable to hit on somebody in this range. Like, it's risky, of course, because like I said, last year, only 28% of them hit out of this territory. But if you can find the diamond in the rough in round 5, round 6, round 7, who's getting over you know, thought on the running back market, it can be a huge benefit to your team, especially if you go take a elite tight end like a Brock Bowers, or you take an elite quarterback like a Josh Allen. You're going to need a running back hit somewhere in your draft to help you, you know, make up the ground at that position.
Yeah, especially in the first seven rounds or so, I find this year, hitting on those skill positions is going to matter so much, because as we'll talk about, outside of a few names at the tight end position, I think the optimal strategy is waiting at tight end this year. Outside of a falling value at quarterback, I think the optimal strategy is waiting at quarterback this year. So differentiating the first seven rounds between the running backs and wide receivers and picking your spots, I think this year is more important than ever.
And we're going to start with a guy that's kind of cheating a little bit. He's technically in the running back dead zone because he's an early fourth round pick in multi-site ADP. Every creator on the site minus Davis and Sammy have him ranked in round three. So generally, I think Javonte Williams, we can kind of just skim through. Again, when you look at, is he a dead zone or a bet zone running back? Well, if you go through the checklist, he's on a good team. He has a good offensive line. He doesn't have any high-end competition for touches. He's maybe not the most talented running back in the world, but he's good enough. He's been an RB1 in fantasy already.
Top 15 to 20 talent.
Yeah, and he's got pass-catching upside, and he had injury questions earlier on in his career. He was relatively durable last season. Again, I don't think we need to spend too much time on Javonte Williams. He's clearly not a dead zone running back.
Yeah, kind of similar to, you know, what we thought about Kyron these last couple of years. We're just like, is he one of the superstar talents in the league? Probably not. But when you have a good offense and you're getting a good workload, you're probably going to pay off in fantasy.
Yeah, we'll avoid Josh Jacobs for the time being just because of the legal stuff. He's definitely not going to be in the dead zone if his legal stuff clears up. If we talk about Travis Etienne, and there's a big cluster of veteran running backs, Travis Etienne, DeAndre Swift, David Montgomery, Tony Pollard, Jalen Warren, Chuba Hubbard, and Ramondre Stevenson. All of them are 27 years old or older. So from when I do the early round running back strategy video every year, they're going to fit into the trusty veterans category of that kind of grouping. I think Travis Etienne's a dead zone running back because I think he checks multiple boxes here. I think he's a talented player, and I think he has pass catching upside, but there are some age questions. I have some offensive line and team questions personally, and I think that Alvin Kamara is enough competition for touches that it could affect Travis Etienne's output. And again, he's not really like going to have a monopoly on the touchdowns or the goal line because Kamara is there. Like, they paid Etienne. He's probably the starting running back. He'll probably get 60% of the opportunities.
He's the starting running back, but yeah.
Yeah, but I think he'll, you know, relinquish some of the important touches to Kamara, which I've been on the train of for months now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Obviously, they made it official. They did sign him to the extension. It does sound like he's going to finish his career as a Saint. So I do think that is definitely a negative when it comes to a guy like Travis Etienne. At the same time, obviously, there is upside. He was an RB1. The offense projects well going into this year, especially from a pace of play standpoint, how they finished out last year. Like, I do see the upside, but as you can see, I do have him six spots lower than his underdog ADP. He's a guy that I would just prefer the wide receivers in that range. I'd prefer a guy like Colston Loveland. So I do agree with you in the sense that if I have so many more upside wide receivers, so many more upside running backs that go around after him, I don't see the ceiling for Travis Etienne in regards to where his current price is at. So I have him at 41 overall.
Yeah, so again, if we had to label these guys dead zone or bet zone,
dead zone.
I think he's a dead zone back. And people are starting to realize it now since this Kamara extension. I think his ADP is going to come down. Like you see, it's down 2.4 spots in the last 7 days. I think it will continue to go down into the fourth and maybe even the fifth round.
Where's his ADP in terms of non-underdog ADP?
Because multi-site ADP, he's at 39.4 at pick 41 on Sleeper. So we're talking a late fourth round pick there. 38, 39, 46 on Yahoo. So he's like basically a 4 or 5 turn pick closer to it, at least on home league platforms, which is odd because underdog is half PPR. And I think maybe you could argue he's higher on underdog because people think he's going to get a lot of pass catching upside or whatever. But in a half PPR format, I'm not really understanding what his ADP. I've been all out on his ADP this entire offseason. So I haven't drafted him one time.
No, I'll give you credit. Initially, I was closer to ADP, but I have dropped him because, I mean, it is concerning because even though I think Kamara is clearly washed as a player, at the end of the day, we saw Kareem Hunt get legitimate touches last year. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, sometimes you just get touches, man. Sometimes you just get touches. Let's talk about DeAndre Swift, whose ADP right now is in the mid-fifth round. Now, he's challenging because even though he has some, you know, age question marks, he's 27 and a half years old, injury-ish question marks as well because in the past he's dealt with those. And he has what I would consider a pretty good back in his backfield in Kyle Menengai. He showed out to be a pretty solid player. Swift himself doesn't have any talent question marks. He's been a top 24 running back every season of his career. The team is great. The offensive line is one of the best 5 to 10 units in the league. And he has pass catching upside, as we've seen from him. Maybe not so much last year. I mean, like, that's my question. That's going to make or break him, probably.
So he averaged like 11.8 receiving yards per game in the final 8 games last year. And he was splitting routes with Kyle Manungai. So I think this is far more of a question mark than a pro. Like, I understand when he was drafted out of Georgia, he's a space back. He's going to get all these catches. And it's like, he hasn't been that. Like, the last couple of years, well, he just simply hasn't been
that. The first 8 games or so last year, he had at least 3 targets in 5 of 8 games.
And what changed in the final 8 games, Corey?
Kyle Manungai started playing more. That was what changed. I mean, Caleb Williams started playing better, and they were playing better teams, I think, as well, down the stretch.
Like, it's just hard for me to see because, again, like, if he works out, you're praying it looks like those first 6 weeks, but I think it's going to look a lot closer to the week 8 to 18 where it's like, yeah, you get that 1 8-target game. Outside of that, 1 to 2 targets basically in all but 2 games.
Yeah. Swift is one of these guys that I could see looking back on the season going, yeah, he was kind of a dead zone back, or going, yeah, we overthought DeAndre Swift. He was the starting running back for the Chicago Bears. Like, he's truly a coin flip. And again, I tend to lean towards the devil we know, the history of a top 24 back every season of his career, but I wouldn't expect a smash pick either. Like, I
get on base guy,
13 to 15 point per game running back if he hits, but I think his floor is kind of what you're outlining. Like, it's kind of scary what Manungai could become in his second year.
Middle of the lineup player with low pop, but he'll bat you 280.
Yeah. It's like, whatever. Again, am I going to venture into the running back dead zone to take DeAndre Swift when I can take, you know, the upside swing on Luther Burden, or I can take Devontae Adams, Terry McLaurin, Mike Evans, like clear number one receivers for their team, or Garrett Wilson, Tedrick McMillan, clear one receivers for their team, or, you know, take a Jalen Waddle or a Jameson Williams even. Like, I think I would just rather get my 13 to 15 points per game from a receiver in that territory than I would take the risk on DeAndre Swift at that point.
Yeah, especially too, if you're looking at his ADP, what, 50.6 overall, it's like, if I have a Bijan or a Gibbs, which is about where Swift's ADP lies in terms of
he's near the turn,
just give me an upside RB2 at that point. I would much rather swing for upside when I have the stability of 22 to 25 points per game at the RB1 spot.
Yeah, I would rather swing on, you know, Judkins or, you know, Tootin or Price or Henderson or one of those guys. David Montgomery, another one of these kind of veteran running backs. I guess the question for me would be, like, does he still have it? Is he going to hold up? Is he going to be able to carry the ball 300 times and, you know, be healthy? Because he's 29 years old. I think he's still a good running back. Like, I haven't seen a noticeable fall off from David Montgomery. And I actually kind of like the situation. Like, I think the Texans are going to be a pretty decent offense. They have one of the best 3 defenses in football. They're going to want to run the ball, play slow pace, try and score in the red zone with their run game instead of, you know, making CJ Stroud do everything. And Collins is going to stretch the field and stuff. Like, I think the situation is very good for David Montgomery, but dead zone running backs have gotten us into trouble before with good situations and projectable volume. So the question you really have to ask yourself about Montgomery is he still the player that we thought he once was?
Can he be Nick Kaley's Kyren is the question mark. Like, can he be that guy where it's like, yeah, is he a top 10 talent in the league? Absolutely not. But at the same time, he's a hard-nosed runner. He gets the tough yards. He'll have goal line opportunity. He's just the budget Javonte Jacobs this year.
I do think his ceiling is undoubtedly higher than DeAndre Swift's, though, because I think that there's a world in which he commands 300 carries and is like Joe Mixon 2024. And like, that was like a 17-point per game running back.
Yeah, I think that's in the range of outcomes because, like I said, year two going into Kaley, maybe Stroud's more confident. Like you said, this is a sneaky top 12 to 15 offense, and all of a sudden you can fluke into 12 to 15 touchdowns if you're Montgomery.
I lean bet zone on David Montgomery. I would say I lean dead zone on Swift because of the downside risk, and I'd rather just take a receiver, but I lean bet zone on Montgomery because I think the ceiling is evidently higher than some of the other players that are going in this territory. Like, you look in the rankings here, it's like, does Jameson Williams have 17 point per game upside? Does Mike Evans, Luther Burden? Like, I think there's a good chance that Montgomery ends up being the best pick from this territory if he hits his ceiling. Again, he could, you know, James Conner this year and just be terrible and get injured or something like that. But he could also Joe Mixon 2024, where Mixon was taken in like the 50s and 60s of ADP and was literally one of the best picks on the board.
I thought you even meant the good version of Connor, because I think that would be a good comp too, where it's like Connor was a backup in Pittsburgh. He goes to the Cardinals and all of a sudden you're getting some RB1, RB2 caliber type of years. Like, I can see Montgomery being maybe not past the next couple of years, but being a legitimate, you know, 300 touch type of guy. So I'm at 52 just because I have some of the, you know, young guys we'll talk about in a second a little bit higher. But at the same time, if you had to take him as your RB2 and a Ja'Marr Chase led team, that's where I would be at.
Yeah. And with these older guys, you do, if you have question marks, you want to be wary because older guys generally are just not, they're not going to hold up to the rigors of an NFL season when they have thousands of touches under their belt. Tony Pollard, I think we can keep this one brief. He's a dead zone running back. It depends where he's going though. Like in sharper leagues, he might go in the seventh or the eighth round. In home leagues, if people are behind at the running back position, they might push him up to the early sixth or something like that. And that's when I think he's a dead zone guy, because when I check the boxes of a dead zone running back, I have question marks about the team. I have question marks about the offensive line. I have question marks about the player being a good running back still, even though he's rushed for 1,000 yards in four straight seasons. He's not been a fantasy, you know, dynamo. Like, was anybody excited they had Tony Pollard last year? Like, nobody was excited about that. And I think that Nick Singleton's a good player. And I think if he shows out to be a good running back, then that actually presents a high-end competition for touches.
Yeah, I got to lower him in my overalls. I have him lower at running back, but I think he kind of got mixed up because he's my RB28, so I don't know why he's at 68 overall, but I'll fix... I'm assuming much of the wide receivers probably got pushed after him because I made a change at running back specifically is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but still, like, I think in a sharper league, pick 80, pick 90... Absolutely. Take the risk on Tony Pollard. He can be a volume touches guy early in the season. Maybe you can flip him for, like, I just don't see a difference. Like, why would I take Tony Pollard where he's going when I could take J.K. Dobbins where he's going and just flip? If I'm going to just flip the guy midseason when he's producing, I'll just do it with Dobbins instead.
So Pollard is my 75 overall. I'm a little bit more optimistic than you just because I'm higher on this offense. We've kind of talked about it with the Carnell tape bit. And for what it's worth, given how bad the situation was, he was decently efficient last year. So,
but nobody liked having him in fantasy. Nobody cared if they had Tony Pollard. He was untradeable in the flock league. You and I both possessed him at one point on our teams. He was untradeable.
No, you're not wrong. But I mean, the back weighted production at the end of the year, I think matters. I think ultimately that split's going to matter more for me with Cam Ward than it would those first eight games, in my opinion.
Yeah, because Cam Ward, I mean, I'm watching the quarterback documentary right now. After the first month of the season when Pollard was completely useless or whatever, it was like, if we're keeping it a buck, we ass, quote came out. Like, the Titans were better down the stretch, like you said. So that's kind of like the only way he would hit for me is if the Titans are just like kind of like the breakout offense of 2026.
The thing I'm curious about too is the receiving work, because he had 41 targets last year, and we've talked about, okay, you got a rookie number one talent who we think is going to have 140 targets, and I still believe that with Carnell Tate. Wandale Robinson has commanded targets before, but outside of those two, it's like Gunnar Helm would have to take a massive step.
I don't know. Spears and Singleton. Spears wasn't healthy last year, and Singleton wasn't on the team last year, and both of their best skill sets are receiving. Fair. So I would say that his targets are going down, not up.
Yeah, no, I'm curious what the route rate looks like next year. I don't disagree in that aspect. So maybe it's just hard to figure out who to even put over him at this point in that range.
Yeah, I think he's a dead zone back through and through. I think he's the type of profile that you would draft and you would regret after the season. Jaylen Warren, even as an older running back, definitely profiles a little bit better because, you know, he was RB19 in fantasy last year, despite sharing the backfield with Kenneth Gainwell. Still had, you know, what is that, five or six like legit spike weeks?
He was good last year,
season. And you and I both are pretty optimistic on like what Mike McCarthy can do for this offense in terms of pace of play and pass attempts. And Jaylen Warren's got the valuable role of the two of him and Rico Dowdle. He's the one who's going to catch passes from a 42-year-old quarterback who can't move.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, we'll talk about our three favorite bets at the end of recapping everyone, but I've met 67 overall. I'm high of him, the highest at the site. I really do believe that this offense could be a sneaky top 15 unit. I do believe in the check down rate of Aaron Rodgers. And I've mentioned this stat multiple times. In the last eight games last year, Kenny Gainwell was averaging over 17 PPR points per game on less than eight carries per game. You mean to tell me that Jaylen Warren on 13 carries per game can't assume the Kenny Gainwell role in the receiving aspect?
Yeah, I'd say my only pushback there is that they had no receivers, and now they have Pittman and Jeremy Bernard and DK.
I don't think it would be a one-to-one.
Maybe the running back target rate in general is not sustainable from last year.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a one-to-one in terms of volume, because that's totally fair. I mean, you have Pittman. You obviously bring in, for example, a guy like Jeremy Bernard in the second round. Maybe Pat Freiermuth gets more usage than he had last year. Like, I don't think it would be a one-to-one in terms of the exact utility Gainwell got. But if he's getting those reps, even if you have more target competition, post-Achilles tear Aaron Rodgers ain't scrambling. Post-Achilles Aaron Rodgers ain't creating out of structure.
He's the fastest time to throw a quarterback in football for a reason. He just gets the ball out as fast as possible. If it's his first read's not there, his second read's not there, check down. That's what's happening.
And to quote the second year breakout video, if a defender is coming fast in front of him, then he's going to check the ball down.
Yeah.
Pause.
Chuba Hubbard, 27 years old also. He's definitely a dead zone profile here. I mean, I think we could keep this one brief. Talent question marks from last year, right? He's been great before, but talent question marks showed their ugly head last year when Rico Dowdle took his job and his lunch money completely. High-end competition for touches. You and I are both pretty optimistic on Jonathan Brooks, assuming he's healthy. The team is not going to be very good. Like, I mean, maybe there'll be an average offense. The offensive line's okay. It's actually probably even decent. But the lack of pass catching upside we saw last year, just 2.6 targets per game, even though Rico Dowdle's a complete zero in that regard. And again, he's over 27 years old. Maybe there's some injury stuff that starts to set in. I'm just not drafting Chuba Hubbard, period. Like he marks the territory. Him and Pollard both mark the territory of like, I guess I'm just not drafting running backs for a while because I want to have my running backs way before that.
So fun fact, he was dead last in explosive run rate last year. He was 47th of 49 qualified running backs in yards after contact per attempt. You mean to tell me Jonathan Brooks, who had over 4 yards per yards after contact per attempt his final year of college, who has been such a big plus in the passing game, can't take the job from him?
Yeah, I mean, both of us are just on the, like, I'm not going to draft Chuba Hubbard because I'll draft Jonathan
Look where Brooks I have him later. Ranked. Yeah, go to general real quick. Look where I have him ranked. It is...
Yeah, no. Both we're the two lowest on the site, and we hate to do that to a fellow Canadian, but he's buried. Final guy, that's a veteran running back here, and then we'll get to the breakout candidate type of guys. Ramondre Stevenson, this just screams Raheem Mostert 2024 to me. Like, everybody was excited about Raheem Mostert. Oh, he's going to work in, be a pest for Devon Achane. You and I were, like, not at all of that opinion. We were like, Achane's going to take the step forward. He's a year two player. He's going to break out. And that's exactly what happened. Now, Trevion was not nearly as good as Devon Achane was as a rookie. However, Ramondre Stevenson averaging, you know, 9.3 yards per target, which is just a massive outlier in his career. And also all the, like, I just collected all the news blurbs for our draft guide. There's been three reports, Danny, about Trevion Henderson getting better in pass protection or as a receiver this offseason from different beat reporters and people in the Patriots building. It's very clear to me that Stevenson is going to be a pest on the ground, but not through the air.
So the issue is my next ranked running back is Jonathan Brooks. And I just, even though I love Brooks, I can't rank Stevenson behind him. That's where I'm at.
I can. I already am. Yeah, but I have Brooks. Stevenson at 91. I'm somehow pilled on Trevion Henderson, who we'll talk about in a second because he's also a dead zone running back. I'm just trusting the heuristic that you and I have followed for years, which is that year two running backs generally take a step forward, and 28-year-old running backs who are up and down in their career don't usually keep that guy off the field. If I'm wrong, obviously Stevenson will end up being a great pick where he's going. I just don't think I'm going to be.
I don't disagree from the heuristics.
A quick reminder that today's video podcast is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog is the best place to play this best ball summer. All you do is draft. There's no waivers, there's no trades, no in-season management. You just draft your teams, get refined for your home redraft leagues, and collect your winnings at the end of the year. $2 million and $15 million in total prizes to the first place winner of Best Ball Mania 7. Definitely something we are max entering. We are very excited to get refined for our own home leagues, and we want you to join us. Using our promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit on Underdog and first play on Underdog, we'll get you our redraft rankings manifesto, our draft guide, and our dynasty draft guide for free. That's it. All you have to do is sign up, make a play on the site, and you will get both of our draft guides and our weekly rankings in season to help you with your start-sit decisions for free. Check that out if you guys are interested. Head to Underdog Fantasy and use the promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit.
Perspective, but just contextually speaking, Ramondre was the better runner last year.
He was. I just don't think he will be this year.
I can't discount that. Like the thing with Ramondre, because I do think from a pure best ball perspective, you can't trade him. I'm not drafting him a lot on Underdog. But from a pure redraft perspective, yeah, I do think he'll get off to a hot start. I don't think Trevion Henderson, even if by week 8, week 9, assumes a 60 to 70% workload, I don't think he would get that in the first month of the year. So I would agree, if you have to roster Stevenson for 17 weeks, I would not like it. But I learned last year from the Flock League too, having usable weeks from running backs early in the season, then trying to trade high on them is a worthwhile strategy. So,
which is why I'm going to take J.K. Dobbins two rounds after Ramondre Stevenson, because I think J.K. Dobbins is the same exact thing, except cheaper on a better running offense.
Yeah, Ramondre's the one that's tough for me. I'll move Brooks ahead of him because realistically, if I'm going to click one in this range with question marks, give me the one with legitimate league breaking upside. But I don't know. I just can't fully discount what happened last year. Ramondre legitimately looked good on the ground.
He did. He's just been up and down, and Henderson would have to get injured for him to be a league winner, in my opinion. He's kind of just like the new David Montgomery, in my mind.
That's fair. That's a good comp.
Yeah, new David Montgomery, or maybe, again, it's Raheem Mostert 2024, which I tend to think it will be. But let's talk about more of the breakout candidates. These are the fun guys. I think, what do we call, dead zone for Ramondre, dead zone for Chuba, probably bet zone for Jaylen Warren, dead zone for Tony Pollard, bet zone for David Montgomery, dead zone probably for Swift, dead zone for ETN. So a lot of those older guys are more dead zone running back profiles for us. Moving to the breakout candidates, we have Cam Scataboo as the first one off the board in the late fourth round pick. Again, breakout candidates, you're talking like year or three or earlier in their career without any running back one seasons before. So this is, if Cam Scataboo, and I guess he technically was an RB1 in points per game, but if he had finished the season and been an RB1, he'd be going in round two or round three right now. Like, we wouldn't have this price tag on him. It's because he got injured that you're going, or he's going where he's going.
Yeah, and we'll talk about just, you know, checking the check boxes from a receiving perspective. Obviously, he checks that check box. We saw last year 25 receiving yards per game. He was getting used as a pass catcher. I'm not really concerned there. But when we go to the other issues, like the team and the offensive line, the offensive point projection, the overall injury concerns coming off of the fibula and tibial tear he had last year.
He's doing backflips, so maybe he's okay. But
like, also, like, we don't like knuckleheads, and he's kind of appearing to be a knucklehead a little bit too there.
Well, and like, not only that, but like I remember Ryan Heath tweeted this out a couple months ago. Like, this injury doesn't usually show up in the player is injured the next year. It shows up in the efficiency of the player, typically, like the Pollard, Mark Andrews, Chris Godwin seasons that we've seen from this injury. It's possible that Scataboo doesn't, average 4.1 a carry and 6.5 a target. Like, he's more inefficient, especially if Malik's not out there for the Giants and they're struggling as an offense to move the football. You and I are both not very high on this John Harbaugh hire in the experience. Like, Matt Nagy is an objective downgrade to Brian Daboll as a play caller, in my opinion.
It's just, I understand that Scataboo did it last year. You had almost 16 points per game. He was rock solid, like you said, top 10 overall running back in points per game. I understand that that's going to be the pro for a lot of people, but I just can't bring myself to pull the trigger on Cam Scataboo over Bashal Tutin this offseason. I really can't.
Yeah, we're the lowest on the site and it's pretty wide delta between, you know, Nathan at 34 and me at 49. It's like, when I did my projections, I'm like, Scataboo is going to carry the ball like so much because the Giants are going to run like crazy. So that's the part where I can't get too low on the player. But at the same time, I'm like, if he's not going to be efficient, and it's just like an empty calories pick in my mind. Like, maybe he'll be a 13 to 15 point per game running back.
Also, just the range, man. It's just the range. Like, if you're going to take that style of running back, take David Montgomery. If you're going to take a player just at 43.6, where you're like, the efficiency might go down and he might look bad coming off the injury, why not just take the Luther Burden? Why not just take the Colson Loveland? Why not just take the Garrett Wilson? Why not just take the Emeka Buka? Why not just take all the other players that are going at the end of the fourth, early fifth round? I mean, fuck, an underdog 43.6 is the mid fourth round.
I'd rather take Judkins around later because they're the same exact projection to me.
Well, and that's the thing. And I'm less concerned about Judkins' injury because I believe with Judkins, it was only the fibula. Yeah. Or fibula. With Scataboo, it was the tibia and the fibula, no?
And he was a full go. Judkins is a full go in OTAs and minicamp too. Like, he's not injured at all, pretty much. And again, it could affect his efficiency, and it's not like he's on a good team either. Like, the Browns are probably objectively a worse team than the Giants are. But with Judkins, he was a better prospect. He commanded a workload for 17 or, you know, near 17 games instead of just a small sample size like Cam Scataboo did last year. So again, I think both of these guys could be about decent, like 13 to 15 point per game running backs, but I'd rather have Judkins because he goes later.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to put it. Like, opportunity bundles wise, would you rather have the round four wide receiver in Judkins or the round five wide receiver in Scataboo? If I view Judkins and Scataboo similarly, give me the, you know, 8 to 10 spots higher ranked receiver in my rankings.
Yeah. The very difficult player to talk about is Bucky Irving. Now,
I have no clue what to do with him.
You and I were like totally out on Bucky Irving at one point. The one thing I will say in Bucky Irving's defense, because I am actually one of the higher people on the site on him. I have him at 50. You have him at 68. So you're all the way out at this point.
I have Gainwell higher too.
The reason I have him, I moved him up recently, is because he was out there at the end of minicamps. He was healthy. He was cleared for participation. If he's not healthy for training camp, then that's obviously a huge hindrance, and I'm going to move him down. However, because he seemingly is healthy, I mean, he wasn't a workhorse last year. He wasn't a workhorse his rookie season. He was, you know, a 60% opportunity share guy, and last year he averaged like 3.4 yards per carry because he was dealing with foot and shoulder injuries. Yeah. And generally, I just think that Zach Robinson is a pro for Bucky Irving because he threw the ball like crazy to his running backs in Los Angeles and in Atlanta. And also, Bucky Irving is the best back in this backfield. And what if Kenneth Gainwell is just Rashad White's replacement? What if that's all he is? He's not more than that.
So you said he's very clearly the best back in the backfield. If you're taking the 2024 year, yeah, that's the highest ceiling of any back in the backfield. I'm just not willing to discount Kenny Gainwell. I mentioned in the Jaylen Warren point, he was
generally
on the stretch last year. Yeah, and I mean, inefficient even before the shoulder injury.
They played the Texans and Eagles and Falcons, who were top 10 run defenses last year.
Yeah, and he had 25 carries for 66 yards against the Jets, too.
I know. It's, again, like, I'm not going to sit here and say that Bucky Irving is bulletproof, but there was a reason he was going in round two last year. We thought he was a really talented running back.
It's more just pro Gainwell. Like, I'm sure if you search up Gainwell on the ad player, I'm curious where I'm at with him compared to the experts. Because I believe I have him in my top 100, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'd imagine you're near the top of the list. I'm actually higher.
Why doesn't it show?
I don't know.
Where I have
for some him. Reason, it's not showing up for you, but you could just look where you have him in your rankings right now.
Did he get taken out? Yeah, he must have gotten taken out. Wow, that's crazy.
All I'm saying on Bucky Irving is if he's extremely talented, like we thought he was coming off of his rookie season, I know for a fact that Todd Bowles has no problem giving him a big workload, that Zach Robinson will have no problem using him in creative ways too. Like Bucky Irving, we forget, at Oregon was an extremely great receiver. And while he was inefficient on the ground at the beginning of the season before his injuries, look what he did as a receiver, Danny. He had 100 receiving yards against the Philadelphia Eagles. He had 50 receiving yards against the Texans. Like,
I guess my point is
per game on the same field as Rashad White running a lot of those routes as well. So I think that where I feel confident in Bucky Irving, you know, reaching his ceiling or having a good, you know, payoff at his ADP is that we already thought he was really talented before and he has pass catching upside. And, when you go through the bet zone checklist, he does check a lot of the boxes outside of really like the backfield competition of it all and the injury side. I'm a little bit less concerned than I was maybe a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I guess my point too is you're mentioning the receiving profile, but Kenny Gainwell also has a receiving profile. And I just think in terms of the contract, in terms of the dependability, if Bucky Irving makes the wrong fucking read on a play and Gainwell gets in there and he's just doing what the coaches want from him, like, I'm just curious, is he going to be tethered to that workload all along? Like, I don't think it's out of the range of outcomes come week 8, week 9, where it's a 1A, 1B and Gainwell's getting a lot of the consequential touches. Like, I think Bucky Irving at his best is the best back on this team, but I just don't want to be discounting Kenny Gainwell, I guess is my perspective here.
Like in my projections, I have Bucky for like 13-ish points per game, which is obviously like a pretty low projection. I'm probably going to increase his opportunity share because right now I've projected for a 50.15% opportunity share, which is really low. I think Bucky Irving, if healthy, would probably be closer to 60%.
Again, like it's hard for me to just completely discount Kenny Gainwell. Like you guys paid him this offseason. Everything we've heard from him is
I have him out targeting Bucky Irving in my projections. I have him for 53 targets, Kenny Gainwell, which is a lot.
Yeah. I mean, again, we'll see what ends up happening here. I have Gainwell ranked as my, I think, 90th or 91st ranked player. I just moved him back to where he was because I'm assuming maybe in an update he got taken out somehow. But yeah, I have him in a range with like Gainwell, J.K. Dobbins, Rico Dowdle, like guys like that. Like, I think
that's totally fair. I just think that as we get into training camp, assuming Irving is cleared and is, you know, out there, the price is going to adjust itself and he's going to go back to being a fourth round pick because the team knows he's the best running back on the team, even if they paid Gainwell and they have a role in mind for him.
Yep. That's totally fair. We can get through the rest of these names here and kind of decide who our three favorites are total.
Yeah, so I mentioned Judkins already. Again, it's the same thesis as Scadaboo. He already had commanded a full workload. Yes, the team and the offensive line stinks, but the offensive line was like wretchedly bad last year. Like you brought up the stat on the video we did the other day where he's got like most of his yards coming after contact on his 3.6 yards per carry. So with Judkins, I'm, again, just heuristically betting on a really talented young running back who was a great prospect and elite athlete. There's reports now from the Browns, Mary Kay Cabot, and some of the beat reporters there, that they're using him a lot more on third down, which I thought he had an underrated ability for coming out of Ohio State and Ole Miss, where he wasn't, you know, totally utilized in that fashion. So for me, I'm just comfortable betting on a player that I think projects for 300 carries. Because when he started last year, like, No training camp. He had the legal stuff going on. No practice with the team. He comes out his like very first game with Baltimore and leads them in carries in that game. And the very next three games in a row, he has 18 or more carries. Like he was already the starting running back, having not been there most of the offseason.
Yeah. And initially this offseason, I had a little bit lower just because of the projection on the offense. But as we went through that video, like you said, the offensive line, 0.4 yards before contact blocked per attempt last year. He was creating 3.2 of his 3.6 yards per carry after contact. And you mentioned in that video, they replaced all of their starters on the offensive line. They got a whole new system that they're running, obviously, with Todd Monken coming over. Like, I'm very curious, even if it's just a fresh voice leading this offense, we assume they're going to be the 32nd ranked offense in the league. But all that leaves is upside to where if they're better than that, all of a sudden, maybe Judkins is a 15.5, 16 point per game player.
Well, not to mention, too, just from a schematic standpoint, Kevin Stefanski's offense is confusing. It's hard to understand. Yeah. If you're bad offensive lineman, like running a zone blocking scheme is not easy. So I think running more of a gap scheme, which is what Judkins is probably better in anyways, with Todd Monken coming in, just do what kind of Derrick Henry has done in recent years, which is when there's a hole, go and hit it, get to the second level. I think Judkins is going to be better fit for this scheme than he was for Kevin Stefanski's scheme as well.
We both have him higher than Nathan does, so that says something.
Yeah, and I'm the highest on the site on him, and I've been very high on the talent of Judkins for a long time, going back to his college profile. It's actually, if Nathan hadn't taken him where he took him, I probably would have been the person who bit the bullet on Judkins at some point because of how high I was on the prospect. So Trevion Henderson is former college teammate. Again, I think we've kind of said Scadaboo more of a dead zone profile. Bucky Irving, we kind of cut both ways. I would say dead zone for now, but health-wise, maybe he's a bet zone guy. Judkins, clear bet zone for both of us based on our ranking. Henderson's also a clear bet zone guy for me just because of what I said about Stevenson. We've already talked about this backfield. I just think that Henderson is going to take a step forward, point blank period. When you're as good as he was when he got the starting opportunity and there's positive reports already, and I think that will continue into the training camp and preseason periods, you're slated for a big step forward, in my opinion.
Yeah, again, he's a guy who last year or 2 years ago, I would probably have ranked at like 38 overall. I have learned a little bit that if it's a little bit murky in the early portion of the year, this is probably more of a buy low candidate, I would say. But you run the risk then if all of a sudden he gets the exact workload you were hoping for in week one, week two, he's an unobtainable asset. So you kind of got to pick and choose your spots here with Trevion Henderson. If you think he can get that workload straight away, take him in the fourth round if you want to. Take him in the middle of the fourth round because he's got the upside to return as a top 25 overall asset. Realistically, with a player like Henderson, it's not really a CLV thing. It's not like, oh, I'm out on him at 44 overall, but I'm in on him at 52 or I'm in at him at 55. It's just your risk assessment with what you believe the backfield to be between him and Ramondre Stevenson. I've heard people joke before. It's like, oh, Ramondre Stevenson's handcuff is going two rounds earlier. You're going to have people on completely different sides of the equation.
Yeah. And like you made reference to earlier in the video, I think for me, because I'm picking at number one overall in my home league, and I'm going to be taking Jahmyr Gibbs, knowing that at the 4-5 turn, if I don't have an RB2 already, let's say I went with like Nico Collins and AJ Brown at the 2-3 turn or whatever, and I'm on the board at 4-12, getting Trevion Henderson, knowing that Jahmyr Gibbs is my RB1, feels better. It feels easier. And I might even double up on both of these guys, Judkins and Henderson, and take the volume guy in Judkins and the upside guy in Henderson and play them through my flex.
Well, even let's just say you took one of them there. If you took a Gibbs, you wrapped around back, you got AJ Brown plus Nico Collins,
or fourth Rasheed round, Rice or Smith or whatever.
One of those guys. Fourth round, you get, I don't know, like fucking insert Terry. Wide receiver, Terry McLaurin, Waddle. Maybe Jalen Waddle, someone like that falls. So you have your three wide receivers, you have your Jahmyr Gibbs, you take a Judkins or a Henderson there at the fifth round. you could always on the next turn take a guy like Jaylen Warren, where it's like, okay, maybe week one I play Warren over Henderson because I like the projection, but long term, if my team's going to be at its best, if Henderson does become my clear two, and now I have Warren as a three, now I have three wide receivers I took in the mid rounds that are going to average probably between them, what, 18, 17, and 15 points per game, maybe?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think that you could also mix and match like the safe Montgomery with the risky Henderson at the 4 or 5 turn as well, if you really wanted to. If you're going the full house strategy that I'm going to talk about later this offseason of I want three running backs for the first 5 rounds, and you take Jahmyr Gibbs or Bijan with your first pick, you could grab Henderson and Montgomery, or if you prefer like a Swift or somebody like that and a Judkins, you could, you know, pair one volume guy with one upside guy.
Heck, I mean, even if you wanted to go full crazy, say, hey, I go wide receiver at the 4th overall pick, and all of a sudden you wrap back Breece Hall, Dave Montgomery, Travion Henderson or something like that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, you could definitely, if you went, yeah, like Jamar Chase and
Drake, you know, London,
Rishi Rice or something like that. Yeah, you could definitely go in that direction. But yeah, Henderson, definitely a bet zone guy for me. Again, we can keep this one brief because we talked about him on Sunday, which was Bashel Tootin. Obviously, bet zone for sure, just because of the upside. With Tootin and Henderson, both of us understand, because you're the Tootin guy, I'm the Henderson guy, at least so far this year. We both understand that the floor is quite low with both players.
Yeah, the way I look at it, though, is when I compare, again, I love Henderson, but Ramondre Stevenson, to me, is much more of a threat than apparently Jones fracture Chris Rodriguez is what the rumor is right now. Like, if that's the main competition for touches for Tootin, a guy that has less than 250 career carries, a guy that is now dealing with a lower body injury that has missed the entirety of camp, and that's what's holding down Bashel Tootin's ADP, you guys can have your Chris Rodriguez. I don't care. Give me Bashel Tootin all day, every day, twice on Sundays. And this is the guy that I love pairing with my Gibbs team, that I love pairing with my Bijan teams. People might say, oh, Dan, you have him at 47 overall. That's pretty high. Yeah, but that aligns me up directly where if I have the second overall pick to take this guy at the 411.
Yeah, exactly. And again, he's like, is he the biggest sloppy pick of the year?
100%.
Tootin? He's a sloppy pick of all time. Like, and it's not shocking to me that Nathan and Avery, who are the least sloppy and most unk drafters of the site, are the ones that are the lowest on Tootin, because he is unproven. He does have no history really of being anything more than a you know, situational, you know, scat back in the NFL. But you and I were like quite high on the prospects. We think that the scheme can elevate him as long as he's going to command somewhere between 250 and, you know, something like that touches, he's going to be an RB2 or better.
So Corey, you know, what's the funniest part, by the way, of that is that if you go and you do the draft simulator, if you do, for example, like drafts with the viewers, I've hopped on with Sammy, for example, we did that recently. And then you see the draft review after it's done. I shit you not, if you go creator by creator, it almost looks like the rankings are flipped each person you look at. Like, the rankings on the site this year are more widespread than I even thought last year they were.
I think in the mid rounds for sure, like rounds 3 through 7 type of players, is because we're all taking big stances. Like, for example, I'm taking a big stance on like a Garrett Wilson, Teterol McMillan type, whereas, you know, Mason and some of the other guys are a lot higher on those types of players. And then vice versa, like you and I are like slappy Paulson drafters. Loveland. Like, I have Judkins and Henderson ranked a lot higher than other people. You have Tootin ranked a lot higher than other people. And yeah, Loveland ranked a lot higher than other people. The last guy that's kind of in this dead zone territory, he goes a lot lower on sleeper, which is why his ADP is down near the 6-7 turn, or the 7-06 on a multi-site ADP. But I would imagine in most sharp leagues, he's going to go towards the 5-6 turn. And that's Jadarian Price, who in our expert average, we're all collectively a lot higher on. We have him at 53.8. overall on average. He's definitely a bet zone back for me, because again, if you just go through the checklist, you and I scout these players, right? That's what we do for Dynasty. We scout these players. We make our determinations. Is this a good player or is this not a good player? You and I were both high on the talent of Jadarian Price, even despite the profile not being very good. You can see his FSC grade is not very high, but again, very good excuse to why. You had Jeremiah Love in your backfield on a year 1 to 3 breakout candidate. The guys that hit versus the guys that miss is usually the guys that miss are guys with significant backfield competition, which is not the case with Jadarian Price. Miss me with George Helani and Emmanuel Wilson. They're not very good running backs. They're like UDFA talents coming into the NFL. Pass catching upside, we don't know that for sure about Jadarian Price, but I thought he looked good on his receiving touches in college. And again, this is a team that won the Super Bowl, that has a good offensive line that will give him touchdown and goal line opportunity, because if you combine Zach Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker's touchdowns last year, you get some of the most running back touchdowns in the league.
So let me ask you this. Obviously, after the Chase Brown breakout in 2024, Zach Moss is kind of a guy we look back on and like laugh about, like, oh, that was really a conversation. Who do you think is going to be the guy we laugh more about? Chris Rodriguez or George Helani?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the pushbackers of Jadarian Price would say, well, what about Zach Charbonnet? It's like, well, Zach Charbonnet, when I had Dr. There's James Brady on the channel.
Back to late October, the report came out from Schefter.
Yeah, like 9 months removed from a torn ACL reconstructive surgery in mid-February is when he went in, when he had the surgery. That puts him about at Thanksgiving. In terms of when, and teams do not rush running backs or position players in general pre 9 months anymore. They know, they have the data. Like the data that, you know, fantasy doctors are quoting are from journals that doctors of teams read and maybe published. So they're not going to rush Zach Charbonnet back pre Thanksgiving, most likely. So that gives Jadarian Price 10 weeks, 11 weeks of potentially the starting running back. And if he's looking like a great player and commanding a huge workload, then it's weird because you don't usually think of a rookie to have maybe a better early half of the season than the second half of the season. Because if Charbonnet comes back on November 25th or something like that, maybe it's more of a committee. I just think that Price is too good to let that happen. I think he's going to have already taken over the job.
That's what it comes down to for me. And the other factor here is, do you think a team that isn't worried about Zach Charbonnet would take a running back in the first round? Or do you think a team that wasn't worried about Zach Charbonnet would wait as long as they can and maybe going into the season, flip a fourth round pick for a veteran contributor? Which do you think is more likely if they weren't worried about Zach Charbonnet's recovery timeline?
Yeah, they could have very easily saved their draft pick for a different position and signed Tyler Allgeier or Rashad White or one of those running backs on the veteran market for cheap money.
It's probably like $2 million.
Yeah, they could have drafted a running back in round four instead. They could have drafted Catron Allen in round four and been like, we're going to roll with Catron in case Charbonnet is not ready right away. But no, they were like, we're going to take the RB2 off the board in the first round over some other positions where they could have taken a receiver. They could have taken another edge rusher. They could have taken, you know, a corner or something like that. They lost a couple guys in free agency linebacker defense. Like, they took a first round running back for a reason. They like first round running backs generally are going to get running back touches right away.
Yeah, and like the only case where you're like, oh, well, this guy didn't get the full array of touches in his first year, like you might point to like a Sony Michel, but Sony Michel also got drafted by the Patriots, who had three or four usable running backs on that team, all with different roles. Like comparing the Patriots draft philosophy, the same team who drafted Cole Strange in the first round when he was a fourth or fifth round projection, shouldn't be common amongst every single NFL team. Like first round running back is going to get work.
Yeah, and Clint Kubiak's gone too. So it's not like the whole, oh, well, Kenneth Walker sucked last year for fantasy. It's like, well, Charbonnet isn't healthy and Walker's an inconsistent runner. We've talked about this before. And Clint Kubiak is gone now on a different team. So we don't know philosophically if they're going to feel the same way about Price. Like the way that they use Charbonnet on the goal line, it was probably due in large part to Walker being somewhat unreliable and not finding the hole right away, or maybe fumble issues. They thought Charbonnet was better ball security wise. We don't know.
And funny enough, I think Walker's a really good running back from an elusive standpoint, from a big play potential standpoint. But the thing that Jadarian Price has that Walker didn't is that I would argue that the two biggest traits that I love for Jadarian Price was his physicality and contact and his vision. Like those were the two limiting factors that kept Walker from a full three down workload last year.
Well, and especially if you wanted to use Kenneth Walker in that role going into the season, and then you're like, okay, he's not capable of this. He doesn't, you know, do this very well, which is why I'm not high on Kenneth Walker this year, by the way, which I think it's an oxymoron to be high on him this year and not high and still understand and recognize that about him as a player. Yeah. I think as a front office, you go, okay, our starting running back last year had limitations. Let's take a starting running back this year who doesn't have that limitation.
For what it's worth, I also think LeSean McCoy didn't have the greatest vision, but when you're just an elusive playmaker for Andy Reid, that's why I'm higher on Walker, but that's another topic.
Yeah, for sure. So that is the dead zone. We went through, kind of talked about the numbers. All right, what do we want to do? Again, keep in mind, last year, the dead zone was not good. It was 28% return on investment rate, but in 2023 and 2024, you were talking one of every two running backs being a good pick off the board, and the ADP landscape of the running back position is a lot more similar to 2023 and 2024 than it is 2015, for example, where the dead zone profiles were horrible talents just pushed up the board because they're running backs. Whereas now it's like, we got year two, Trevion, Jadarian Price, first round running back, Judkins, second round running back last year, David Montgomery, multi-time RB1, DeAndre Swift, multi-time RB1. Like, the profiles are better this year, in my opinion, in the dead zone than they were last year in the dead zone. So again, you don't want to be too over your skis on these guys, but taking a shot on a fifth round running back or a sixth round running back or fourth round running back can pay big time dividends if you hit on an RB1 type of season.
Exactly. But overall, three favorite picks in this range. For me, Jadarian Price, Bajal Tuten, a little bit later on the board if I want a veteran. I like a guy like Jalen Warren. For you, you mentioned what, Quinshon Judkins, also Jadarian Price. And who was your third?
Trevion Henderson. Yeah, I think Henderson's one of my favorite picks on the board, period, right now. And same with Judkins. Those two guys, both great prospects, both had the talent to be workhorse running backs. Both, you know, Judkins showed he can be, and then Henderson, you know, ran into some trouble. But I think both have the talent to really take a step forward in year two. So that's why I think those are my favorite dead zone profiles. And again, we're going to talk more about, you know, zero RB and hero RB and double hero RB type of strategy. And of course, the dead zone is going to be a large part of that. But we did want to break down, like, first and foremost, specifically looking at the guys going in the dead zone. Who do we like? Who do we not like? And I think we did a good job of that today. So if you guys enjoyed the video, leave a like down below, subscribe to the channel. If you guys are new around here, we're trying to get to 100K before Christmas. If we can get there, that would be great. And also, if you want access to all of our rankings, our redraft rankings manifesto, our draft guide is live right now. Our 2026 season projections live right now. Definitely go and check out Underdog Fantasy. The best way you can get the draft guide and the manifesto is by signing up using the promo code FSE. You will get $50 in bonus entries on your first deposit. And you will also get a gimme pick in your pick'em lobby to use right away on MLB or whatever you guys want to use it on. And of course, you'll get our draft guide emailed to you within 24 hours of your first play. So if you sign up, start doing some Best Ball Mania drafts, try and win some big prizes and get practice for your home league, you'll also get access to the draft guide. And if you already have an Underdog account, you can of course get the season pass, which is live right now for $34. You'll be covered from now until basically 2027. It's not a monthly membership. It's $34 for the entire time. You get all of our draft guides, all of our bonus content for the entire rest of the year, and all of the bonus content and draft guides from your other favorite creators in the Flock League. So that is all available to you. Again, link down below in the pinned comment. But with that being said, peace out. We'll talk to you soon.